This program has been grant aided by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this, the third episode of POSH. POSH, or Port Out Starboard Home, is a four-part radio documentary looking at Dublin's Docklands, the area, and its people. The programme is presented by Ger Ledden with additional reports by Alan Weldon for Near FM. In this episode, we look at the position of Harbour Master, and we also discuss the tourism effects that large cruise ships have brought to the area. We also continue our talk with Pat Ward on the corporate and social aspects of the Dublin Port Company.
My name is Fergus Britton. I'm the Assistant Harbour Master here in Dublin Port. Now, the Harbour Master is identified as the person of whom a great deal of responsibility falls for safe operations within the port. His prime role is ensuring, so far as is practical, the safe movement and berthing of all vessels within the port's jurisdiction, i.e. the safe navigation of these vessels. This responsibility extends to the movement of hazardous cargo and noxious substances as classified in the International Maritime Dangerous Goods Code, which is an international code, and that is independent of all the other navigation issues that he has to deal with. He was responsible specifically for the pilotage service, operation of the conservancy, which is the dredging and surveying and voyage of the channel, and other duties involving employment and control of the manpower within the harbour department.
Fergus, you mentioned pilots, pilotage. In these days of communication and GPS and electronic navigation, is there really need for a pilot?
80% of the ships, or the movements of vessels in and out, don't take a pilot. But that doesn't mean that they haven't got the skills on board. Mm. All a master or chief officer on board would have to pass an examination by the Harbour Master and myself, and also would have to have carried out 6 voyages in and out half of the hours of darkness, ideally. So they would have developed the skills and the knowledge of the pilot, and they would also have specific knowledge of their own vessel. Most of those vessels would be the ro-ro vessels we would see, the ferries, and very regular vessels in and out of the port.
Is there anything in particular that a captain or the master of a vessel should be aware of coming into Dublin Port, for example, sandbars or rock outcrops?
Well, he'd have to be very familiar. We examine them on the lights and the buoys, the characteristics, the flashing of the lights at night, because they come in at night a lot, or hours of darkness. You'd also have to be aware of the shoals, the depths on the berths, and also all the peculiarities in relation to the port, and very knowledgeable about the area port within the port's jurisdiction, such as the bay and all the areas of the bay. And within the bay as well, we have a traffic kind of separation scheme, which is like a roadway on the water, an imaginary roadway on the water, which is on their charts, electronic and paper. And they must follow the routes specifically, and we monitor by BTS the movement of those vessels in and out of the port.
Pleasure craft obviously use Dublin Port and Dublin Bay quite a lot. We've got the Pool Bay, the Yacht Club. How do you marry the different usages between a roll-on, roll-off cargo ship and somebody else sailing for the afternoon?
Well, once the vessels are in the channel or the fairway, they have priority, the commercial vessels, because they're confined because of their draft, their visibility, their maneuverability, etc. So we require that all leisure craft stay out of the channel or right at the very edge of the channel so as not to interfere. We will direct them sometimes for the north side of the channel or the south side, depending on what's moving and where. And sometimes we may ask them to hold position if the weather conditions allow.
Now, how will you direct them?
We catch them on VHF. By and large, most craft will have VHF, regular craft in and out of here. Also the small ferries that operate within the port now. And we just call them up. They'll call us also, requesting permission to enter, to leave. And we'll advise them then where to stop or what side of the channel to come up, etc. Yeah, we have a control VTS station down in the eastern end of the port, and all the operators have at least a V1031, which is an internationally recognized license for operating a VTS. They will, if they cannot contact them directly, we will then send a pilot boat over to the vessel and instruct them to get out of the way or to hold position or whatever is required.
Fire a warning shot across the bows. Speaking of firing warning shots across the bows, the tall ships race, which was held in Dublin some years ago, is that a particularly difficult weekend or week for you?
It's not with the vessels themselves, because all these tall ships are manned by professionals. Certainly the key crew are manned by professionals. I know the volunteers and trainees will take up most of the crew, but the people we deal with are generally professionals. The issues may be, they may attract amateur or leisure craft which wouldn't be fully aware of the dangers and wouldn't operate normally within the fairway of the river. They sometimes can cause a problem, so we have to marshal them or police them in the river.
Fergus, how far does your portfolio take you? Does your jurisdiction extend up the river?
To the west, the jurisdiction is fairly clear. It goes up to Rory O'More Bridge, which is virtually the Guinness's, as we know, the bridge beside Guinness's. To the east, we have two jurisdictions. The port jurisdiction runs from the Bailey through the Burford Bank and to a surrender point on the south side. But the portage goes out to a line from the Bailey to the east out to 6 West, down the line, that line of latitude, and back into surrender point on the south side.
Dredging. How often would a port be dredged? Or, I mean, is that a very rare occurrence, or how does it happen?
We're very lucky in Dublin Port because of the movement, the number of movements within the river and the fairway, up to 50 a day, generally keeps the channel quite clear. But we do get build-ups in certain areas. By experience, we know where they are. And ideally, we'd like to dredge every 2 years. If it goes beyond that, we get those build-ups, and it's difficult to kind of to flatten them down. We have to work around them to a certain extent. But 2 years, we manage perfectly clearly.
Now, that brings us to tides and the amount of space that a boat will need between its keel, its bottom bit, and what's underneath it. How do you calculate that?
Well, we get printouts of tides, and it gives the tide height for every 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we will, for a vessel over, say, 6.9 metres, 6.8, 6.9 metres, we would check the tides and see if they're restricted. And if they are restricted, we would always allow at least 1 metre onto keel clearance. And that would go for vessels up to 100 metres. Vessels bigger than, up to vessels of 200 metres. For vessels between 200 and 250 metres, we'll be looking at something like 1.3 metres under keel clearance as a minimum. And vessels 300 metres plus, you're looking at 2 metres under keel clearance at all times.
Would you ever have a vessel that has been grounded, or what's the correct topical term?
Not within the fairway or channel, but we've had vessels which broke down or stopped and were driven by the tide onto the bank. Mm-hmm. Lucky enough, we have all sandbanks, so I'll be do them because we have our own tugs. Send the tug out there and just wait for the tide to rise and just put the pressure on them and they come off fairly cleanly.
That leads me to another question. Tugs, why are tugs used if ships are under their own power?
Because the ships are designed primarily to go from A to B at sea. When they come into port, they need to manoeuvre into sometimes relatively tight berths and basins. And because of that, not all vessels are as manoeuvrable as some, and they require a tug or two tugs to help them manoeuvre alongside the vessel, alongside the quay, or to leave the quay and go back into the channel to exit the port.
Fergus, from what I understand, Dublin Port used to employ or would have commercial divers, scuba divers, or underwater operatives on their books. That isn't the situation anymore. What does happen now?
No, but basically we used to dive with, say, one or two divers, and they carry out our own commercial requirements. But the HSA requirements increased that number to 4, so we hadn't got those employees within the port. So we've over the last few years been contracting out to commercial companies.
Is it a very difficult task in Dublin Port? Would the visibility be exceptionally bad? I presume it wouldn't be great.
For the last 20 years or more, the visibility has been very, very poor. A meter would be a good visibility. Sometimes it's what they call a pea super. But more recently, with the river getting cleaner, they're getting 2 meters sometimes. And so the visibility has been improving.
Fergus, would you have experience of being a mariner?
So every harbour master would be required to have a vast experience as a master at sea in command. So that takes maybe 10, 15 years to build that up. So we would be bringing that experience with us when we join the port.
And how would you compare, maybe this is an unfair question, but how would you compare Dublin Port, for example, to other ports that you would have worked at or visited or sailed?
A little unfair, but Dublin Port, like the other main ports within the country, would be of the same calibre. You're talking about Dublin, Belfast, Limerick, Shannon Foynes, Cork, of course. They would all be of the same the same benchmark. The smaller ports in Ireland, lucky enough, they have properly qualified and well knowledgeable harbour masters as well, but they wouldn't have the same selection or variety of ships and vessels going in and out of the port as we would have in Dublin and the other bigger ports.
Would there be an association of harbour masters, or would you get together to?
Yeah, there is an association of harbour masters within Ireland that's been on the go for, I'm sure, 30 years or more. And we share knowledge and experiences within the ports, and all the ports in Ireland are available to our.
Fergus, coming to work in the morning, what is the worst thing? What is your biggest fear? The worst thing that you may have to deal with?
The worst thing is a collision or a fire, anything where there's a possibility of explosion, and there was a possible loss of life.
On the water.
Yeah.
And your responsibility, am I right in saying this, is the wet side as opposed to John Farley being the dry side?
The land, yeah. As somebody said, the watery bits. Once the just the quay edge and the all the water, the fairways, the bay, the river, etc., all falls under our jurisdiction.
If it flows, it's yours.
If it flows, it's yours.
Alltså två trappor upp från informationsdäcket. We have a message for our passengers. Due to maintenance work on the gangway in the port, disembarkation will take place from the outer deck number 7. That is 2 floors above the information deck. If in need of assistance, please contact the information as soon as possible. We apologize for the inconvenience this may cause.
Jerry Cooley is one of Dublin's best-known tour guides. Jerry meets and greets disembarking passengers from Dublin's cruise ships during the summer season. Now, I asked Jerry, have cruise ships changed the tourist landscape in Dublin?
Yes, they definitely have. I have been sort of lucky insofar as I've been guiding since 2009, and basically that's when it became more than 10 cruise ships a year. And this year we're heading to 83 cruise ships in the year. And just looking at the news yesterday when Splendida came in, which is the 11th biggest cruise ship liner in the world at 333 metres, we would get, when they arrive in the city, they basically flood the city. I know it's hard to believe, but if you think about it, there are about 5 locations in the city where tourists must hit. And the must-see destinations are, you've got to go to the Book of Kells, you've got to go to Temple Bar, you've got to go to St. Patrick's Cathedral, you might include Christchurch, you will include the Guinness Storehouse, and you might include the Phoenix Park. So all of these venues are all hit at the same time. So when I'm assigned to a cruise ship, it's like trying to judge for the sake of your crew and your 45 people on board, to get them through as comfortably as possible without having to queue. That is the only downside to the cruise ships landing and increased capacity, that there is only certain amount of capacity for the visits that they go to, and the challenge is to make them more accessible and be more flexible. Like what I'm saying is maybe open a little bit later, open earlier when there's a cruise ship in, because the cruise ships crews tend to disembark very early. So there's an opportunity maybe to get in maybe before 9:30, maybe 8:30. But all of these things will be ironed out, I'm convinced of it, because I've been there as these ships arrive, and I'm really pleased to hear that within the next 5 years, Dublin Docklands are planning a proper reception area, a proper docking area other than what's there at the moment. And what's there at the moment basically is, if there's a cruise ship coming along, they basically clear the dockside of containers the night before. It's all very makeshift. It's all very orange coney, and I hate to see the orange cones. And I even seen them when they were showing Splendida on the news this evening. The orange cones were there. So it is a positive, absolutely 100% positive. The challenge is to understand that when 3,000 to 4,000 people arrive in, and if there's a second cruise ship, which is that's what the plan is, that we'll have the facility to take the biggest ship in the world, which I think is 369 metres long, and two of them together, if they come and arrive at the same time, we need to be able to plan for the maximum capacity in the locations that these people want to see, and they're the ones I outlined, the 5 or 6 must-goes. The number one, I suppose, is the Guinness Storehouse. And that's really a challenge, because they have to be in and out within 6 hours. Because they're coming in on the high tide and they're leaving on the high tide, and they're sailing away. They don't stay here overnight. They sail in on the morning high tide, and they're away on the evening tide. There's no overnight berthing for them.
As Land Operations Manager for the Dublin Port Company, John Farrelly is ultimately responsible for the disembarkation and the embarkation of passengers visiting Dublin on board cruise ships.
Yeah, it's a huge part of our job. You know, when we're getting in the vicinity of nearly 100 cruise ships, you know, the large cruise ships are discharging, you know, anything from 3,000 to 5,000 visitors to the city. When you have that intensification of people getting off, to get on board buses, shuttles, trains, walking and so on through, we would have very busy times. So just like this morning, we have one cruise ship in. Tomorrow we have two. Tomorrow is one of the biggest cruise ships in, with 330 metres, which will be that 5,000 figure will be there. We need to make sure we optimise the staff, because we have an absolute peak, followed by a very long trough, followed by a very big peak. So we would, you know, all the things around staffing and so on through, making sure people get into the city, because I think the big thing that people must understand about cruise ships is they have a 12-hour window, sometimes even less. So it's absolutely essential for us as a port to make sure that we can get to facilitate the movement of people, they can get off as quickly as possible, to get them in the city as quick as possible, or also the larger Leinster area or wider, because people are going to Enniskerry. Some people are even heading to Belfast, to Cork, to this may be the only stop and so on through. So they make the most of their 12-hour window to do what they want to do. So they're generally coming in on the high tide, and they will stay within on the berth during the low tide period, and then they then leave on the outgoing high tide again. So that's that 12-hour window. So the cruise ships generally can come in at any time from, sometimes we'll see a cruise ship coming in at 2 o'clock. It may be able to do a double tide window, so it might stay longer to head out later. And a lot of time it is, because it's the great thing about cruise ships, you do all your day business in the new harbour. You get on board the ship, and the ship travels during the night. Again, the time that it comes out depends on the speed that the cruise ship has to travel between ports. So if the window is less or longer, they may stay in the port longer, and their speed to the next port will be quicker and so on through.
My thanks there to Jerry Cooley and John Farrelly, and of course before that to Assistant Harbour Master Fergus Britton. Now, in episode 4, we will be talking to Teresa Weaver about the Ringsend District Response to Drugs project. But before that, I spoke to Pat Ward, Corporate Manager with the Dublin Port Company, on this and other Dublin Port Company social and corporate initiatives.
Pat, can I ask you about Ringsend District Response to Drugs? What is this initiative?
RDRD play a phenomenal role in the work that they do, and Teresa Weaver, who heads up RDRD, does excellent work, and indeed her team do excellent work in the community. We have supported RDRD for a long number of years and continue to support RDRD and the work that we do. There recently we were invited along, in fact I made a presentation to their Volunteer of the Year, and it's quite humbling when you listen to the stories that people would tell you, and the challenges that family members have had, that those that have had addiction problems have, and that they've come through the other side of it, through the support of the family, through the support of RDRD, and indeed that I have no doubt in some small part what we do in supporting RDRD helps them continue to do their work. It's humbling to listen to people who would share their stories, where they tell us that they were addicted to drugs or they were addicted to alcohol, which led then to perhaps homelessness, which led to a career of crime, which included in some instances people being incarcerated or being imprisoned for the crimes that they've done. And to listen to them share their story, they went into the rehabilitation program at RDRD, and to qualify for their awards they have to be drug free or alcohol free for 12 months. So we're quite privileged to be able to support RDRD and the work that they do.
As a port authority, your relationships with the other ports in Ireland, for example Fines, Limerick, Cork, how does that work?
Well, Dublin, of course, is the largest port under the island of Ireland and is the gateway to Ireland. The model that we have here in Dublin is we operate in five different modes, from low-low to row-row, indeed to bulk liquid, and of course to cruise, which we've seen a significant increase in this last number of years, and we forecast that to double over the next number of years, and that again is hugely beneficial to the city. We will have in 2015 200,000 cruise visitors that will come to Dublin, and the revenue that generates in the local economy is estimated at about 40 million euros a year. That in turn is spread across the retail, the hospitality sectors, and that gives jobs to local people in the community. In the wider context of the other ports in the island of Ireland, again we would have a very good relationship with the other ports. The model of competition that we have adopted here in Dublin is that what we would describe as intra-port competition. So effectively, what is Dublin Port Company? Dublin Port Company is an infrastructure provider. We would have a different model of operation to the other ports. For instance, in the port of Cork, they undertake the stevedoring, the logistics and warehousing activities themselves, whereas in Dublin there was a conscious decision a number of years ago to move away from that particular model. So what we essentially do is, and what's at core to what we do, is we're an infrastructure provider.
Pat, I've noticed, now maybe because I'm involved in producing this documentary, but I've noticed over the past 12 months a higher emphasis on public relations. I am hearing more, reading more in the press, seeing more on television, more of a positive story coming from Dublin Docklands, Dublin Ports, whether it be about recently you had 3 cruise ships, the biggest amount ever. Is that a deliberate focus on public relations to bring the city and the port together?
Well, within corporate services, we have 3 legs to the stool. Effectively, on the one hand, we have human resources, we have cruise tourism and communications, which fall under the brief. And Dublin Port Company, and indeed Dublin Port, has been a huge success. And as I mentioned, is the economic driver to not only the city, but the economy. And we've shared that success. Maybe we haven't boasted about it in years gone past, but we're all after coming through a very difficult time over the last number of years. And we're sharing the good news story and the success of Dublin Port Company, the success that that brings to the local economy, the success that that brings to employment, and indeed the performance of Dublin Port Company, because at the end of the day, while the company trades as a private limited company, our shareholder is government, and we have returned year on year very healthy dividends back to the government in recent years. So we have actively engaged in promoting the good news stories. We're sometimes shy not to promote the good news stories, and we read all about the bad news. So we took a slightly different approach in recent times and said, let's share the successes with the people of Dublin and the people of Ireland. Because if we look at our recent ABR application with Ambora Penalta, that's going to significantly change the skyline of the port. And in the next 4 years, once completed, we were looking at, and you mentioned the it was four cruise ships that we had on the 23rd of July, that brought in 13,000 visitors to Dublin on one single day, which was estimated 1.3 million spend in the local economy. That gave us a taster of what's to come in the context of those works, where we'll have two 360 metre ships side by side, berthed at the East Link Bridge, coupled with space for a 220 metre ship. So it's a good news story. It's good for Dublin Port Company, it's good for the City of Dublin, and it's good for the country at large.
Pat Ward, Head of Corporate Services, Dublin Port Company, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ger.
And that completes episode 3 of Posh Port Out, Starboard Home. My thanks to Fergus Britton, Jerry Cooley, Pat Ward, and John Farrelly. In episode 4 of Posh, we'll look at water safety in the port, social initiatives such as the Ring's End District Response to Drugs, St Andrew's Resource Centre, and some other issues pertaining to the Docklands area. Posh was produced by Ger Ledden for Near FM and aided by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland's Sound and Vision Scheme.